Honorable Rauf Hakim, you have 24 minutes.
Honorable Deputy Speaker, in the வெளிநாட்டு அமைச்சின் மீதான விவாதத்தில் நான் பேசுவதில் பெருமகிழ்ச்சி அடைகிறேன். முதலிலே ஆரம்பத்தில் நேற்றைய தினம் பிற்பகல் எமது கட்சியின் பாராளுமன்ற உறுப்பினர் சகோதரர் எம் எஸ் எம் நலீம் அவர்கள் தன்னுடைய பதவியை ராஜினாமா செய்து உள்ளூராட்சி சபை தேர்தலில் போட்டியிடுவதற்கு முன்வந்திருக்கின்ற சந்தர்ப்பத்தில் அவருடைய இந்த தியாக மனப்பான்மையை, கட்சிக்கான அர்ப்பணிப்பை நான் இந்த சபையினூடாக பாராட்ட விரும்புகிறேன். இந்த சபைக்கு வந்து 4 மாத காலத்துக்குள்ளாக இந்த சபையிலே மிக சுறுசுறுப்பாக இயங்குகின்ற ஒரு பாராளுமன்ற உறுப்பினராகவும், தன்னுடைய பிரதேசத்து பிரச்சினைகளை இந்த சபையிலே எடுத்துரைத்த ஒரு பாராளுமன்ற உறுப்பினராகவும் மாத்திரமல்லாமல் தலைமைத்துவத்துக்கு பக்கபலமாக பல விடயங்களிலே கட்சி நடவடிக்கைகளில் ஈடுபட்ட அவருக்கு அவருடைய அரசியல் வாழ்வு மென்மேலும் சிறக்க வேண்டும் என்று நான் பிரார்த்தித்துக் கொள்கிறேன். அவருடைய பாராளுமன்ற பிரவேசத்தை அவர் நினைத்த சந்தர்ப்பத்தில் மீண்டும் கட்சி வழங்குவதற்கு தயாராக இருக்கிறது என்பதையும் நான் இங்கு பதிவிட விரும்புகிறேன். அது மாத்திரமல்ல, கட்சியுடைய பாராளுமன்ற பதவியை விரும்புகின்ற ஏனைய பிரதேசத்து உறுப்பினர்களுக்கு நான் சொல்ல விரும்புவது, அவரை போன்று அவரை பின்பற்றி தங்களுடைய அர்ப்பணிப்பான அரசியலை அவர்கள் செய்வதற்காக அவர்கள் முன்வர வேண்டும். குறிப்பாக அமைப்பாளர்கள், முன்னாள் பாராளுமன்ற உறுப்பினர்கள், முன்னாள் தவிசாளர்கள் வட்டாரத்திலே போட்டியிட்டு கட்சிக்கு வெற்றியிட்டு தந்த பிற்பாடு பாராளுமன்ற ஆசனத்துக்கான தங்களுடைய கோரிக்கையை முன்வைத்தால் அதை நிச்சயமாக கட்சி பரிசீலிக்கும் என்பதையும் நான் இங்கு சொல்லி வைக்க விரும்புகிறேன். மம மகி கதாவே முள் கொட்டசே முலிமக்கி என்ற அதாஸ் கரணுவா ஒபத்துமா தன்னோ ஒபத்துமா பார்லிமெண்ட் கதாகரா பே அமாத்துமா மே ரட்டே வென்ட நியமித்தவ திபு விஷாலதம வஞ்சாவாக் விளக்கிம சந்தா மம பார்லிமெண்ட்வே முலிம கதாவக்கலா இன் பசுவ சிரேஷ்டாதிகரணிட்டு கேல்லா தானன்யோகிய கரகன ஏ ஆன்லைன் வீசா வஞ்சாவ நவத்துவா இன் பசுவ எவக்கட்ட திபுணு ரஜேட சிதுவுனா பிரகாஷ அக்கரான விசேஷம் அமாத்திய மண்டல தீர்ணையாக கத்தா குவான் தொட்டுப்பலே திபுணு ஏ ததபத இவத்கிரிம சந்தகா ஷனிக்கவ அமாத்திய மண்டல தீர்ணையாக கத்தா வீசா நொமிலே லபாதீமட்ட ரட்டவால் திஸ் பகாக்கட்ட வீசா நத்துவ மீ ரட்டட என்ன புல்வாம் வாத்தாவன கத்திக்கலாம். நமுத் ஈய பெரியதா மட்ட மத பரதிக ரட்டக தானாபத்துமே கியாசித்தியா எத்துமாக ரட்டாத் ஏகட்ட அத்துலத்துனாத் ஏ ரட்டே சஞ்சாரக்கேண்ட மிகேண்ட தாமத் வீசா கண்ட சிதுவில தீயணும். நத்தாங் ஒன் அரைவல் வீசா வித்தர எலபின் வீசா ஃப்ரீ டிராவல் ஏக தாம ஏக சாத்திக்க விழா நத்தி பவ விசேஷம் கேண்டனாம் the particularly the ambassador for United Arab Emirates brought it to my attention that though the country has already announced that the 35 countries would be allowed visa free entry to the country, his country's nationals still have to process visa or at least have to come on arrival visa. So this is a matter that the honorable minister must take some immediate steps to rectify this. Having said that, there is another serious matter. There is another Middle Eastern country, or rather Far Eastern country, popularly known country, which helps our country, which helped our Umayyad project, Iran. The diplomats there are now unable to open bank accounts in this country. They can't even obtain a credit card from this country. It's a very serious situation. The Vienna Protocol on diplomatic privileges makes it possible for everybody to all these diplomats to have these facilities. But have we become lapdogs of the imperialist countries in the Sri Lanka? Has Sri Lanka become a lapdog of the imperialists? Do we deny our diplomats the right to open a bank account in our country? So it's a very serious matter, Mr. Minister. Though the diplomats have met the secretary to the Ministry of Finance, still they are unable to open a bank account. What is this serious situation? This is a shame. I think Honorable Minister will certainly look into it and get this rectified fast, because this is a country which has stood with us in every international fora. In every issue, they stood with us. Even in the United Nations Human Rights Council, every time they voted in support of us. Such a country, there are diplomats in this country, is denied the basic facility of opening a bank account. So please look into this matter and get it rectified without any delay. Having said that, may I now turn to the votes on the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Today, I draw your attention to critical concerns in our foreign affairs, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Bilateral relations with neighbours and partners, regional cooperation, the Indian Ocean region, peace, security and human rights, and multilateralism. So I want to deal with these subjects. Sri Lanka must adopt a modern, balanced and proactive foreign policy to address challenges and embrace opportunities for national progress. Our foreign policy, however, continues to lack a clear, goal-oriented approach. We still cotton on to terms like strategic, neutral, or non-aligned foreign policy. What do we mean by this? But the same outdated methods and practices that were prevalent during Gotabaya and Ranil Wickremesinghe times as presidents still persist. What specific aspects in the foreign policy and foreign relations stand out this government from its immediate predecessors? That is what I am asking. Our foreign policy approach concerning the Indian Ocean region remains very ambiguous. Is the government making it overly security focused, so much so that peaceful activities that may benefit the country will be lost over a period of time? Between development and security, where do we draw the line when it comes to the Indian Ocean and also on a number of other issues? It is a sad reality that the government has no clear plan on advancing equitable exploration and exploitation of marine resources, identifying responsible and considerate partners for mutually beneficial cooperation. This imbalance may undermine national interests, which today put premium on economic advancement and sustainable development. Honourable Deputy Speaker, on the 25th of February, Honourable Vijitha Herath, our Minister, addressed the 58th session of the United Nations Human Rights Council. It was Sri Lanka's first high-level statement at the UN, made by a new government. As I stated previously, the decision to engage with the Council and the Office of the High Commissioner is a very positive step. I congratulate the Minister for that, signalling a shift from the confrontational tone of previous years. Tone and tenor matters, but it's not something that would differentiate your stance from previous governments in substantive terms. Mr. Minister, your emphasis on collaboration with the Council and progress in human rights, supplemented by technical assistance, is welcome. This approach is crucial for a nation recovering from economic stability. Efforts towards reconciliation, such as infrastructure development and recruitment of Tamil-speaking police officers, as well as upgrading the Jaffna Library, need to be commended, as does the idea of holding Sri Lanka Day celebrations this year. These are all good to create a positive vibe, but will remain only symbolic steps if you do not substantively address the mindset, the bureaucratic mindset of some of the officials, who are very hostile to these concepts. So you have to bring in a mindset change in the bureaucrats of this country. Questions remain. The government must clarify its plans for strengthening domestic institutions like the Office of Missing Persons and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Practical measures and sound policy frameworks are essential to ensure meaningful progress. Delays in addressing accountability have led to international criticism and the establishment of the Sri Lanka Accountability Project. Mr. Minister, I would like to quote from the update on Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights, Sri Lanka Accountability Project. This document was out last evening. It is now in the website. Last evening, Sri Lanka time, this came on the website. Your minister said next September's sittings, they are getting ready to talk about the advances they have made with the Sri Lanka Accountability Project. He talked about a domestic process. Well and good. Venasakkara ganeema sandaha praveshayak gannawa wethuma kiya sitiya. Thing now ehema kiwwat, I have to tell you, you have to look at this particular document that has been now put out by the office of the High Commission of Human Rights. Now it talks about different subheadings have been given. Now if you talk about, they are talking about the mandate, collecting, consolidating, analyzing and preserving information and evidence. Collecting, consolidating evidence as well as priorities under, up to September 25, supporting relevant judicial and other proceedings, including in member states with competent jurisdiction. Now, it talks about advocating for the agency and support of victims and survivors. It talks about developing possible strategies for future accountability processes. Then, in the same breath, it also talks how to support these things. Now, it will be good to note this. Office of the High Commission of Human Rights acknowledges the government of Sri Lanka's rejection of the mandate provided in Resolution 51.1 and subsequent resolutions, but has encouraged the government of Sri Lanka to engage constructively with the accountability project in its accountability-related efforts. Now, other UN member states can play a vital role in supporting this office by engaging with the government of Sri Lanka to encourage its cooperation and to foster an environment conducive to accountability efforts. Member states can also leverage the accountability project's full potential by sharing data and information, submitting requests for assistance in investigating and prosecuting alleged perpetrators, and promoting opportunities for justice in national, regional, or international courts. So this is a very, very far-reaching approach to ensure that our past mistakes are corrected. So how the government will engage to comply with all these requirements, particularly regarding the civil society organizations, they talk about it, how to support. The High Commissioner's office is getting ready to say CSOs can contribute by collecting and submitting reports, testimonies, and other relevant information to assist the accountability project investigation, ensuring that the broader context of human rights violations and abuses in Sri Lanka is documented. When submitting information, CSOs are encouraged to follow established protocols and use the High Commissioner's officers secure digital tools to protect sensitive data. Providing concise summaries of evidence will enable the project to achieve its target. So there are so many things have been said. So make sure that your intelligence operatives are not going to be surveilling or using surveillance on all these civil society organizations, which is going to assist the government in its efforts to find the truth and also set up the truth mechanism. The truth mechanism is an important thing. Muslims themselves have suffered in various conflicts. They have their grievances. Others have suffered. Tamils have suffered. Sinhalese have suffered. So this will be a good way to get out of this mess and to see that we comply with the UN Human Rights Commission's requirements. Now, having said that, key issues such as the Prevention of Terrorism Act, the establishment of a public prosecutor's office, and the implementation of the 13th Amendment were notably absent from the minister's statement. Additionally, the lack of updates on justice for the Easter Sunday attacks, also a matter of concern. We saw the ham-fisted approach by the former president, Ranil Wickremesinghe, in his Al Jazeera interview, how he very dismissively dealt with some of these issues. I think he messed up the whole issue for himself. But yet, there are some who praise him. Today we saw Mr. Namal Rajapaksa praising him. But it was a sorry state of affairs. All of us who watched him
it was very, very discomforting for us to see him getting pummeled like that. But anyway, instead of making progress in his efforts to bring masterminds of the Easter attacks to justice, government ministers have created an avoidable national frenzy over bogey of religious extremism in the eastern province. Some print and digital, I am very happy the Minister of Law and Order is here. Now, some print and digital media warmongers, as well as anti-Muslim, hawkish social media, had an open season over the last 10 days, creating panic and decrying the alleged existence of a so-called potentially dangerous group of Muslim youth in Kalmune. They describe these youths varyingly as fundamentalists, as violent extremists, and as potential terrorists. Now, Mr. Deputy Speaker, the Kalmune people are very peace-loving people. As a matter of fact, Easter Sunday attacks, the Sainthamaruthu incident, where the suicide bombers blasted themselves, the information is given by the local people, right? They will cooperate with the government if there is any violent activity. This particular individual who is following this, his convoluted religious practices, if he is a threat to the society, right, you take legal action rather than coming and telling in the public media and insulting the entire region and the people of that peace-loving community. You see, there is no evidence of him turning to violence as yet. If he's having some extremist religious ideas, in particularly following his religious precepts and practices, the community leaders will have to approach him and deal with it, engage with him. But then to label him as a terrorist, right, and label him as a potential terrorist, right, will only make way for unnecessary speculation and even prevent tourists from coming to this country. Right? So this is an unnecessary thing. I think unnecessary bogey has been created. So we are, as Muslim leaders, we are very responsibly saying this in this house, so that if the government wants to investigate, do it very discreetly. Don't come and openly make statements in the public, right? And insult the entire community. The community feels enraged and outraged as to what has been said already. But this group, its existence has been known for several years. We have been watching them. But then, every community we have some of these people who are very ideas. Fundamental ideas, fundamentalist ideas, right? That every religion has these groups, right? You saw a pastor who was hounded, right? He talks about he's insulting other religions and he was hauled up for hate speech. If he does that, you don't go and haul him up, use the local laws and then take action against that. Rather than that, trying to create an unnecessary bogey and creating an unnecessary fear psychosis, and some of the singular media has carried very, very insulting, serious stories which are virtually inciting violence, inciting hatred against the Muslims. So this should be prevented, Mr. Deputy Speaker. The government is under severe strictures nowadays for its apparent failure to uphold law and order and ensure national security. It can demonstrate that it does all it can to assure the public that law and order and national security are not compromised. It can ensure that all who committed serious offences, including the masterminds of the Easter attacks, as well as all those involved in emblematic cases, are apprehended without further delay and justice meted out to them expeditiously. Going by what is happening, I dare ask, is it to divert public and international focus away from this cardinal failure of the government that the bogey of an extremist group in the East has been made the talk of the town today? Mr. Deputy Speaker, the community felt a deep sense of panic, deeply concerned and helpless, yet it remained and continues to remain extraordinarily calm amidst a barrage of stereotyping and scapegoating that government narratives have caused. The government should demonstrate it has the evidence to substantiate its claim by apprehending and neutralizing them if they are violent extremists or potential terrorists. Now, if you can look at some of the interviews, this particular person is blaming me also. right? So I am not getting unnecessarily outraged about it, because these are people who have their own convoluted ideas. You have this particular member of parliament who is also talking extremism in this house, right? But that is parliamentary privilege. But yet, rather than extremism, sometimes he brings insult to other communities as well. So all of which is being tolerated. But yet, since it is parliamentary privilege, they can be tolerated. But if outside parliament, you can take action. There are local laws to haul them before courts. So the Kalmanik community is ever more extraordinarily resilient and patient, committed to cooperate and go the whole distance with the investigators. They are also committed to investigate the alleged links to so-called violent extremism, if any, in full transparency, working with independent multi-ethnic civil society and professional organizations visiting the region. Mr. Deputy Speaker, interestingly, the government talks about people-led transformation, day in and day out. The Honourable Minister, you have made that point in your statement at the Human Rights Council in Geneva. What is the meaning of being led by the people when the government creates unnecessary narratives that implicate a community and make it look as if it was not a part of the people that the government keeps in view? A serious lack of diversity and inclusion in government and state institutions, on the one hand, and a seemingly deliberate attempt at exclusion of a community from national mainstream by shedding negative light on it, on the other, appear to erase the concept of people-led transformation of its true meaning. There is no time for wordplay. Genuine action is needed to rebuild trust and credibility, both domestically and internationally, Mr. Deputy Speaker. The challenges faced by the fisher folk in Northern Province due to unsustainable fishing practices, such as bottom trawling in the Pork Straits, are deeply concerning. These practices deplete marine resources and damage livelihoods, threatening the future of our fishing communities who have already endured decades of hardship. Sri Lanka and India remain engaged in discussions to address this issue with a joint working group and an arrangement for dialogue between Northern and Tamil Nadu fisher folk. However, these mechanisms have yielded limited results, and the genuine concerns of our fisher folk remain unresolved. Sri Lanka's laws prohibit illegal fishing and ban bottom trawling altogether.
Rauf Hakim, you have 2 more minutes.
Yeah, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I'll take the time of Mr. Nizam Karyappa as well. He's not coming.
Sri Lanka's laws prohibit illegal fishing and ban bottom trawling altogether. We must seek India's cooperation to enforce these laws effectively. A constructive step could be empowering the governor of the Northern Province to engage with the Tamil Nadu authorities to emphasize the urgency of finding a solution. Mr. Deputy Speaker, additionally, it is imperative to convene the India-Sri Lanka Joint Commission as a priority, with fisheries cooperation as key agenda item. Failures of the joint working group must be escalated to a higher political level for timely resolution. Honourable Speaker, this is not just a political issue. It is a humanitarian challenge. Livelihoods are at stake. The SDG 14 compels us to act responsibly to conserve marine resources. We propose exploring innovative solutions to this problem. They range from cooperative fishing or joint management mechanism involving Sri Lanka, India and Tamil Nadu. Such initiatives can ensure sustainable fishing practices and equitable benefit sharing. Therefore, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I would like to cite a news item that appeared in an Indian newspaper this morning, which says, Kachadivu Andoniyar Alaya Thiruvula, Rame Suratil Irundu Muvayiram Per Pangetpu, Shanta Antoni Devi Madure Utsavaya Pilibandu. Me Utsavaya Api, me Pruvutti Mehema Kiyala Thiyano, Demalim Man Kiyavannam, தொடர்ந்து பெரிய சிலுவை இந்தியா இலங்கையைச் சேர்ந்தவர்கள் சுமந்து ஆலயத்தை சுற்றி 14 இடங்களில் வைக்கப்பட்டு சிலுவை பாதை திருப்பலி நடந்தது. தேரை இலங்கை கடற்படையினருடன் இருநாட்டைச் சேர்ந்தவர்களும் தூக்கி ஆலயத்தை சுற்றி வந்தனர். இந்த தேர்ப்பவனியும் விமர்சையாக நடந்தது. படகுகளிலிருந்து பத்திரமாக மக்கள் இறங்குவதற்கு தேவையான ஏற்பாடுகளை இலங்கை கடற்படையினர் செய்திருந்தனர். ஒவ்வொரு படகையும் ரோந்து பணியில் ஈடுபட்டிருந்த இந்திய கடலோர காவல்படை மற்றும் இந்திய கடற்படை கப்பல்கள் கண்காணித்தன. கச்சதீவு கடற்பகுதியை 20க்கும் மேற்பட்ட இலங்கை ரோந்து படகுகள் மற்றும் அந்த நாட்டு கப்பல்கள் கண்காணித்தது குறிப்பிடத்தக்கது. So what a nice cooperative exercise this is for a religious festival. If you can do that for a religious festival, why can't you do it for your own fishermen who are violating laws?
Right? Both countries can cooperate and do this perfectly. So I would like you to take an example from this St. Anthony's Church festival in Kachadivu and the facilities provided by both governments to make sure that 3,000 people have come from India to participate in that. A lot of facilities have been done by both governments to make sure that happens without any problem. So similar way, you can approach this issue of the fishermen and resolve these issues by having very friendly discussions. Having said that, Mr. Deputy Speaker, there are a lot of items that I needed to take up. I would like to deal with another important matter relating the tourism sector. Tourism sector, Mr. Deputy Speaker, there are several issues. Now, particularly, I must congratulate the Minister for having appointed to the Sri Lanka Tourism Development Authority and the Tourism Promotion Bureau. Your chairman is a very experienced expert in the field. He was an earlier IATA country manager, Mr. Buddhika Hevavasam. Very good individual you have selected for this job. I would like to congratulate him and the minister for a good selection. There are so many things that needs to be done to improve tourism in this country. In order to improve tourism, that we see there are about 53,900 odd registered rooms are there. There are informal sector, there are several unregistered people who are supplying rooms. So see that they are also getting into some registered process so that there can be proper monitoring of the facilities given to tourists. Then there are several boutique hotels. There are about, already they are talking about 48 boutique hotels, but that must be very small number. There are larger than that. There are several boutique hotels, but then whether they have been properly registered and whether, because these boutique hotels bring in high value tourists. So see, there are sometimes some of the boutique hotels charge even more than $1,000 per night. So there are certain hotels in this country. So try to promote that aspect of it. But in the similar way, I would like to ask the Honourable Minister to make sure that the World Tourism Organization holds its next annual tourism conference in Sri Lanka. Try to approach them and see whether you can get the tourism conference, UNWTO conference to be held here. International surfing competition should be organized by the Tourism Promotion Bureau. Earlier, Sri Lankan Airlines was supported, but Sri Lankan Airlines is in a very, very difficult situation. But yet, to promote tourism, I'm sure they will come forward to assist and have the surfing competition in Arugambe, so that it has not happened for a few years, so try to revive it. As many tourists are willing to fly directly to Colombo and other destinations, but then we had to essentially develop domestic flight services. Particularly, I would like to ask that to reconstruct the seaplane dock at Arugambe. There was a seaplane dock at Arugambe that has now been dismantled, and therefore we are unable to, it is only Sinamaneya operates the seaplanes. At least that would be a big boon to tourism if that can be this thing, and there will be various other people, seaplane operators will also come into play if Arugambe and Pasikuda. Close by Pasikuda, Mr. Hizbullah is here. Batticaloa district has the largest number of lagoons in this country. Right? There are several lagoons all over Batticaloa district. You can always allow these seaplanes to land there. There are very massive acreage is covered by the lagoons. So those can be used for a seaplane landing. Of course, there was an honourable minister or honourable member was suggesting that a airport be built in Pothuvil. But then we already have an airport in Ampara. Improve that runway. Improve the runway and make sure that larger planes can land in Ampara. Batticaloa has been declared an international airport already.
But stopped. Right?
But stopped. International, they, with a lot of pomp and fanfare, the earlier minister announced that Batticaloa had been declared as an international airport, but if you look at the runway, it is with all potholes. It's very difficult for any international plane to land there. With that, I would like to suggest the India-Sri Lanka ferry service. The KKS harbour, there are no terminal facilities. But look at the other end. On the Indian end, there is perfect terminal facility. But here, the people have no terminal to come and land and conduct their arrival facilitation. So terminal facilities in KKS had to be improved. There have been talk about MANA MANA India ferry service. Even that, we need to build a terminal services, particularly for cruise tourism. I would say even Colombo Port doesn't have proper cruise terminal. Try to see that you have a well-equipped cruise terminal, because cruise tourism has brought in so many people. Similarly, in Trincomalee. Trincomalee is a deep sea port, one of the best natural harbors in the world. So make sure that you have a proper passenger terminal in the Trincomalee Ashraf jetty. My former minister, late Minister Ashraf, in his name, in his honor, the jetty has been named. In that jetty, you can create a proper passenger terminal so that people who arrive through cruise ships can benefit.
Even
so,
the ships are coming, but yes, no jetty.
There are several ships coming, but no jetty. This is a problem. No terminal. It is also suggested that all informal sector tourist service providers, like tourist drivers, tuk-tuk drivers, tourist vendors, tourism shopkeepers, tourist facilitators, etc., who are providing services to tourists, be trained and issued with identity card by the Tourism Development Authority or some other authority. Identification of such relevant informal sector tourist service providers could be done by the tourist police until the relevant arrangements are made. These are some of the ideas I would like to share with the Minister on the tourism development side. Having said that, Mr. Minister, I would also like to deal with the issue of Israel's cultural and military presence in Sri Lanka. It needs our attention. While the Prime Minister has stated that no permission has been granted or will be granted for the establishment of Jewish religious centres, we have no problem with synagogues being set up, but it has been set up according to the law of the land. But how has this happened? Now, the Prime Minister said that no permission had been granted for the establishment of a Jewish religious centres. The accuracy of the assertion remains to be demonstrated. There are STF personnel assigned to protect these centres. How does the state give STF protection to some religious premises unless there is permission? Improved ties between our defence sector and Israel dates back to post-conflict period. That's perfect. When Sri Lanka received crucial weaponry support during trying times, it was all accepted. It is this connection that may explain Israel's occasional security presence, perhaps. In 2009, Sri Lanka initiated a labour migration scheme with Israel, allowing seasonal farm workers to earn substantial salaries abroad. Attempts to involve the International Organization of Migration in legitimizing this scheme was unsuccessful. International Organization of Migration didn't want to be giving any certificate for this, because they know these people are being taken to farms in Israel where the poor Palestinians have been ousted. They have been denied access. They are day laborers from occupied Palestine have been working in Israeli farms. With the serious situation in Gaza, several things have happened, right? We have not even decried Israel for what it has happened. The war crimes, right? Brazil, South Africa, right? Even Bangladesh have condemned Israel's action and even petitioned the international war crimes in the International Criminal Court. They said the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and his cohorts must be hauled up for war crimes. But we are keeping mum. We want to, because these are this government has more responsibility, because they have been in the forefront. I know my friend, the leader of the house, was also the president of the Palestine Parliamentary Friendship Association. So you have a duty. You have a duty to stand up against these atrocities and talk about it openly, so that there is nothing wrong. We are not going to unnecessarily offend people, but we have to speak the truth. if the South African president can say it, if the Brazilian president can say it, if the Bangladesh neighboring country can say it, why not Sri Lanka? Why don't we openly criticize them? Then it is also regional leadership is important. Actively participating in Indian Ocean and Indo-Pacific norm building to secure shared prosperity is imperative. Now, I see Honorable Minister had said today that we are going to get ASEAN membership. That's a pipe dream, Mr. Deputy Speaker, right? You know, we did during our economic troubles, we wanted to become a sectoral partner. We were allowed as a sectoral partner, right? So, we are now enjoying the sectoral partner status. But if we are admitted to this position alone, it would suffice for us. But rather than that, what is happening is, and the Honourable Minister is claiming that we are going to get membership. That's the pipe dream, Mr. Speaker. Because it's all who know the process. Sectoral partner. That's right. Honourable Minister accepts that. If it is so, then we would like to. I know the Honourable Minister. Last year, the BIMSTEC established an eminent persons group. A recommendation made by the foreign ministers at the Colombo Summit held in 2022. The governments were asked to nominate an independent eminent expert to the group in order to help chart a new vision and strategy for BIMSTEC. All member states except Sri Lanka nominated independent experts. Yes. Who are both knowledgeable and experienced as well as well accomplished in their chosen fields. Sri Lanka, however, nominated three different persons to the three meetings of the group. Consequently, there was no serious Sri Lanka input at the first session of the group held in Dhaka. The Honourable Foreign Minister, I am sure it's possible that you would have already decided to attend the BIMSTEC summit in Bangkok from 1st to the 3rd April in 2005. I am sure Honourable Vijitha Herath is going to attend that summit. You must avail yourself of the opportunity to demonstrate that Sri Lanka takes BIMSTEC seriously. You must put the house in order to able to initiate, follow up, coordinate effectively all BIMSTEC activities. It is time to make our foreign service think innovatively and come up with practical and meaningful proposals in consultation with relevant ministries, agencies and experts that enrich BIMSTEC's output and its quality of service. Therefore, Mr. Deputy Speaker, economic integration is an important priority if the country would like to increase the strength and strengthen trade and investment ties globally and regionally. While advocating and avoiding overlaps and inefficiencies currently taking place on a possible Sri Lanka-China free trade investment agreement, what is happening? It is a matter that requires participation of all business and other stakeholders. Also, what is the state of progress with regard to the already signed Singapore-Sri Lanka free trade agreement? Are we still seeking revisions to that agreement? And if so, to what extent have we advanced in that direction? Not implementing it or renegotiating it continues to send a negative signal to the world and the region, especially ASEAN, that Sri Lanka remains unworthy of economic trade and investment cooperation. Therefore, the Singapore-Sri Lanka free trade agreement as well as Sri Lanka-China free trade agreement, these issues had to be concluded as fast as possible so that we can benefit from the concessions derived from those agreements as well. Having stated that, I would congratulate the Minister for having conducted our country's foreign affairs up to now, particularly with his statement to the UN the High Commissioners in the UN Human Rights Council. Our position is very clear, but then don't go back on your promises. Engage with the UN Human Rights Council and make sure that we come out of this mess as fast as possible. Thank you.
Vijitha Herath, Minister.
Honourable Member, as far as concerned the visa free of charge issue, the government has already taken a decision to give visa free of charge for 39 countries. There is another new proposal regarding Pakistan. After adding that to that list, the Gazette notification will be submitted to the Parliament. Then you can vote for that. Thank you. And apart from that, the Iran issue, bank account, that issue has already sorted out. There was issue 1 year before. Now it has sorted out.
Yesterday,
I think it's, they don't know about that. Yeah. We will check it.